Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Gary.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Colin.
Welcome. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Call NZ right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Can you
hear
me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Great, great. First off, I want to welcome you to my show, Call NZ. It's right here on blogtalkradio.com. I thank you for calling in tonight. Let's discussing that that book that you put together, a very good book, by the way, how blacks can succeed in the Americas, the Caribbean, Africa, and everywhere else.
Yes.
Welcome again.
So you got a chance to read it, right?
I did. Okay. I did. And very, very interesting stuff. Very interesting. Very interesting. And we're going to... We had a minor technical glitch there.
Okay.
Anyway, just 1 second, Gary.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that. Sorry.
That's
folks,
okay.
Sorry, we're going to get right in. First off, folks, you are listening to Call NZ right here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Colin Jobe, coming to you live tonight from Toronto, Canada. I have my special guest with me tonight, Mr. Gary Hibbert. Gary's going to be talking about his new book, How Blacks Can Succeed in the Americas, the Caribbean, Africa, or anywhere else. Gary, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Very interesting book you put together there. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, I did have a chance to read it. And I'm going to have to read it again. But nonetheless...
Because you sped read.
I'm sorry?
You sped read.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Yes,
you
I'm going to have to read it. Yes, I'm going to have to read it again. Very good information. I think everyone... especially every black person or people who care about black people should grab a copy of this book because I think it's really insightful and it talks a lot about the issues. I don't want to give it all away because that's what the show is all about. But I would definitely, as I said a few seconds ago, I definitely encourage people to pick up a copy of the book. Very interesting to read. It'll at the very least it's an eye opener.
Mm-hmm.
And for some, it might even be a wake-up call. So, excuse me. But I'm glad you pursued it and put it all together so that we could all be enlightened.
Yes, thank you.
But you're welcome. But before we get into it, why don't you tell the listeners about yourself, Gary, and you know who you are,
okay.
What you're all about, and
okay.
How the book came to being.
Okay, well, basically, my name is Gary Moeti Hibbert. I'm a pastor of Dominion World Outreach Ministries here in Toronto. I'm proudly married for almost 24 years, have no plans on getting divorced. We fall in love more and more each day. I have 5 children, and I've basically traveled most of the world except Asia and the Pacific. That's also what, you know, allowed me to really experience the condition of black people in different parts of the world. And so seeing the condition of black people throughout the world was part of the motivation for this book, because I said I had to do something about what I saw as systemic poverty, crime, and injustice amongst black populations, because I saw that this poverty, crime, and injustice was systemic among black people, because people who were poor and from poor regions in their own countries, once they left those countries and came to Canada or to Europe or to America or even went to black-governed countries, those people moved out of the place of poverty into the place of the middle class and even having blacks work for them. So I saw that, I realized that the black poverty was not just poverty like everybody else was facing. There was something deeper than that. And I realized that because of European and Arab slavery and colonization of blacks from Africa, that this thing was a part of our existence. And so this book was written so we could discover that we're black, not because of the darkness of our skin, but because black is a nation. It's a family, it's a people, it's a language, a land. And for us to understand what happened to us because of slavery and colonization from the Arabs and Europeans, and how, what do we need, steps we need to take to overcome this poverty, crime, and injustice. And so one of the motivations for the book is so that people can actually be awakened and actually join the fight for justice. I actually started an organization called Fight for Justice, which is a fight for equality. And my goal for the book is people buy the book and read the book and join the fight for justice.
Excellent. But you mentioned something there a second ago. You said people, even when they move to countries that are run by blacks and they move into the middle class.
Yeah, blacks start working for those people. You look through the Caribbean, whether it be Guyana, Trinidad, Jamaica, any other islands. People who lived big lives or luxurious lives in the countries that they came from. They come to the Caribbean, and then the blacks in the Caribbean turn around and work for those very people. And as you see, I've seen it throughout the islands, and even not just in the Caribbean, but even in Canada, in America, Koreans, Chinese, Indians. And when I take Indians, I'm talking about real Indians from India. They come in, and Arabs come into black communities and go into black countries, and the blacks work for these people. You hardly ever, I've never seen a Chinese work for a black, or Indian work for a black, or an Arab work for a black, or a Korean work for a black. I'm not saying it's not out there, but I've never seen it.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I hear you. And why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? Because you made an interesting point in the book that I believe it's at the turn of the century, 98% of blacks worked for whites.
Yeah.
And even today, that number remains the same. 98% of blacks still work for whites, even though we have more educated blacks than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
We have blacks that are involved in all phases of lives, of our lives that weren't, didn't exist 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
well,
in spite of that, it hasn't improved overall.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason is that the difference between us and most other peoples in the world is that they have a national identity. The Koreans, the Chinese, the Indians, Arabs, they have a national identity. We're the only people on the face of the earth that do not have a national identity. We have country identity, continental identity. We refer to ourselves as Africans, Caribbeans, Americans, Nigerians, Jamaicans, Ghanaians, Guyanese. And we identify by country, where if a Chinese identifies himself first as Chinese, no matter where he's born. Italian identifies himself first as Italian, no matter where he's born. Korean, the same thing. And so when they go into a country, they understand who they are, they understand why they're there, and they congregate and build economy. Whereas blacks don't think we're black because of our skin color. And so we separate ourselves, and it's every man for himself kind of thing, and it's
right.
not about nation building, where those other people understand if they don't build as a nation, they will fall prey to all the other nations around them, and that's what happens to blacks.
Well, where did it all start? Is it, does this go back to slavery, or...
Well, it goes back to the Arab slave trade and then the European trade, slave trade, but it goes further back beyond that when you understand as well that that because of wars between the various black peoples on the continent, blacks would take prisoners of war, slaves, and sell them into slavery. But I also saw something as I studied black history, that there was a tendency to live for now, to deal with what's happening now, and not think about how our actions today was going to affect the future generations. And so the Arabs could not have taken blacks out of Africa without black corporation. The Europeans could not have taken blacks out of Africa
right.
without black corporation, but their understanding of what they were doing was different from what the Arabs and the Europeans' understanding of what they were doing. They were actually, as their normal thing, you have a prisoner of war, you send them into slavery, but by the time they realize that they've sent away their strongest and men and young men, they were now weakened and they opened prey to colonization, and that's exactly what happened. And they weren't thinking about it. We keep sending off our peoples that soon we will be overrun by the very people that we're selling our people to, and that's what's happened.
Right. That's interesting. It's interesting. And so it goes back quite a ways. Because even
yeah.
you know, coming back to what we talked about business,
yeah.
I'm Guyanese, and when I was a child growing up in Guyana, the black community, there were hardly any black businesses in a country in which 35 to 40% of the inhabitants are black. There were very few black businesses. And I know historically the so-called cause for that is that blacks were denied loans and things of that nature to get themselves involved in business, and other groups were encouraged and actually supported. But even when we got our independence, there was almost like, and I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not against this, there was almost like an obsession with education, that the focus was education and education only. And you know, very few blacks thought about going into business for themselves. In fact, I'd even go as far as to say that in some circles it was looked down upon as a backward step.
Which was really ridiculous, because what are you being educated for?
Cool.
You know, because obviously if you're educating, you're going to go work for somebody, unless you're going to be working for government. All the blacks were planning to work for government. One of the things that played into this is after the blacks so-called were freed, emancipation, it would seem, based on anecdotal evidence, that blacks didn't want to really work the fields anymore. I mean, why would you?
Right, they were tired of it.
Yeah, but so they brought in the Indians and the Chinese as indentured servants.
Right.
What they did is that they did not allow blacks to own land, but they allowed
right.
the Indians and the Chinese to own land. Land is wealth, and I bring that out in my book. Money is not wealth. Real wealth is land. And so so when you don't own the land, and you're not a landowner, you don't have wealth. And as well, banks not lending monies out. But again, if blacks had the understanding of who they are as a people, like other nations come, I mean, other nations come, a few of them come into the country, they rally together, work together, put things together, and then blacks turn around and work for them. I mean, blacks outnumber these people. Why didn't the blacks do what these people did? you know, but again, it goes
right.
back to not having a sense of who we are as a people. And so we work individually, striving individually and not seeking to build our nation, and we suffer
right.
for it.
Right. But in all fairness, in terms of the Guyana part of it, one of the things that I've seen, and the last time I was in Guyana was a few years ago, was that there's a lot more blacks, even within the last 10 years, that are getting involved in business than were
before.
And it's significant growth. I mean, they're still farther behind, they're still behind other groups, mind you, but there's still been a significant growth in that area. So there is a slight changing of the mindset, but still more people are focused on getting that good job and that, as you said, that government job or that managerial job. That is still the dominant mindset. And so maybe it'll take another generation or two to change that, but there is some progress, you know, be it little, but it's better than, I guess, nothing.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen how the future is going to evolve and what will happen within the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, I'm hoping that my message of how blacks can succeed does get into Guyana, and that process is sped up.
Well, I'll do what I can to help you as much as I can. I still have some, you know, contacts down there. Not many. Everyone's leaving, and we'll talk about that in as the show progresses as well. And that's another issue, the brain drain. But we'll definitely have to see what we can do to get that going for you. You know, and you know, in your book, you talked about education as a method to improvement.
Yeah.
And what about the importance of family? Because I think one of the things I've noticed, and I've been doing community radio now for almost 8 years, and one of the issues I've noticed in our community is that our family unit for a lot of us is not very strong, and I think that's a huge part of a lot of the social ills that the community is afflicted with, is that there's no sense of family for a lot of us. It's disjointed or dysfunctional, and I think that's one of the issues that we need to focus on. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, education is key. It's very key, but family is central, because there is no nation without families. You get rid of families, you do not have a nation, you do not have a society. Where the family is dysfunctional, education takes a back seat. One of the reasons why so many black Caribbean children are struggling in school, in the Toronto school system, is because of dysfunctional family units, where many of the family units are single mother family units. And so the mothers are working multiple jobs. Some of these mothers never finish post-secondary education themselves. So they're not able to be there for the children, or even if they try to be, they don't understand the school system or how it works. And so one of the things that we have actually developed is a program that addresses not only the remedial issues of the math, reading, science issues for the children, but also addressing the need for family involvement. Most of the school system addresses the child. Everything is about, let's fix the child, not realizing that there's something wrong with the child at home. And if we don't fix the home situation, trying to fix the child is just like putting a Band-Aid on an open wound. It may look like something has happened, but it's going to be purely ineffective. You're going to have to cut the leg off. And so family is central to ensuring that the children are being educated, because education is essential to improvement, but that cannot happen in a dysfunctional family setting.
Right, right. And what are your, in terms of that, what about the black male? What role does the black male have to play in that development?
Yeah. Well, the black male is central because the father is central. I use the United States, for example. 70 to 80% of black children are born into single-parent families, mostly female single-parent families. That's worse than slavery. Slavery wasn't that bad. Okay? And slavery was a better record than what it is now. And so with the absence of the father, it's just the studies and statistics show time and time again, you take the father out of the family and you're asking for a lot of poverty. You get poverty issues and you have crime issues. Yes, there are those who overcome those statistics, but on the most part, those, especially black males who grow up without a father, they're way more likely to live in poverty and way more likely to get involved in crime and way more likely not to finish high school. And so the black male has to step up to the plate to realize, look, if you don't plan to be there to take care of them, stop trying to produce them. There's no badges to having baby mothers or having children and as a notch in your belt of how many children you have, how much youth you have. You're destroying the black family and therefore destroying the black nation and keeping the black nation impoverished and raising up criminals.
Right. And you're ultimately so destroying yourself.
Yeah, and so the black man definitely has to step up to the plate.
Right.
And take
Absolutely.
His place in the family.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, as I read your book, and you know, I personally am an optimist, and I do believe that things can change if people want change bad enough.
Yes.
But when I talk to people, some people say to me, you know, they say, well, you know what, that's the way things have been for a long time. Things aren't going to change, so why are we wasting time even talking about a book like How Can Blacks Succeed? You know, we're just, you know, it's just the way it is, and there isn't a whole lot we can do about it, and why don't we just accept it? What do you say to people who would say that?
What I say is this, that it's not always been this way. Blacks are rulers of civilizations. Blacks have had their turn. Blacks are pioneers of civilizations. All the major civilizations of the world were built on top of black civilizations. Blacks have invented many things. It's just that a Eurocentric educational system doesn't teach people that. And basically, when people, human beings, want change, things change. And if you accept things the way they are, they do not change. As long as the people in Eastern Bloc Europe accepted things the way they are, communism and that kind of system ruled, until people said, you know what, enough is enough. We can't take it anymore. And there's a human element to the point where people get to the place where enough is enough. What has happened with black people is that we have made just enough advancement to think that we have arrived. But when you start looking at the statistics, you realize that in some cases over the last 40 years, that we have not improved. A matter of fact, as it pertains to the number of blacks in prison, things have gotten worse. We realize that a generation of young, especially young black males, have put us back 20 years as pertains to our advancement because they're not finishing high school. They're not going to post-secondary education. And so things aren't moving forward for us. Things are moving backwards because many blacks think, oh, we have arrived, and not realizing that we did not arrive. Things were refought. Things were given to us. And this is not to belittle the civil rights movement. We thank God for it and for all the investments of it. But we fought to be treated as equals. And the fight for justice not to be treated as equals. Our fight needs to be recognized as equals. And the only way that we can be recognized as equal is by us being equal and not being dependent upon whites to provide us with jobs, dependent upon non-blacks to give us anything, and for us to step up the plate and begin to take control of our own economic destiny, that's the only way things are going to change and not get worse.
Right.
So
right.
It can
But we tend to always want to look, first of all, we tend to blame other people for a lot of the issues that affect us. We tend to always look for other people to come and bail us out. When in fact, I agree with you, it doesn't, first of all, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it makes a mockery of human nature, because it's not human nature to, especially if I'm benefiting from your problems, that I would support you to turn it around so that you can compete against me. Right?
Exactly.
So, but that's why it's to me, it's always kind of baffling when I hear people to have this dependent mindset that somebody else who's not like you, doesn't know your experience, doesn't, quite frankly, doesn't care about you, would want to bail you out and help you turn your position around. It makes a mockery of human nature. But a lot of people, and unfortunately a lot of our people, have bought into it. Why do you think that is? Like, where is that coming from? Because to me, that just,
well,
just from pure logic, doesn't make any sense.
Well, it came from, again, basically the after effects of slavery and colonization by the Arabs and the Europeans. They created a dependency class where blacks became, we think that we were born to work for Europeans and for Arabs. And so they created a dependency. And they understood that. They understood that political freedom without economic freedom was false freedom, because it's not true freedom. So blacks got independence. Whoop-de-doo. Independence from what? First of all, they were independent in the first place. They were colonized.
Right.
And so basically the Arabs and the Europeans recognized that we did not no longer have to waste a whole lot of money and time and soldiers and man force to physically be amongst the blacks to keep them in place and to keep them working for us. They realized that all they had to do was give them a sense of political freedom, which was not political freedom, because we're using their government system.
Right.
And we still use their government system to rule over our own people. We're not using our system. We're using their system. And they still control the money. They still control the banks. They can still control the economy. So even though they no longer rule the government, they still rule the banks. They continue to rule the money flow and the business. And so we still, nothing changed. It's just that we had our own governments, but still working for the same people that ruled us from in the first place. And
right.
So
we just replaced the bosses.
Exactly. You know, you just replaced the bosses, but it's still the same company. Still working for the. It's just that the bosses look like you.
Exactly.
But you're still working for the same company.
Which is truly quite a game. It's quite a game. But, you know, you're right. We have, in terms of politics, we've made a lot of strides, but it hasn't transferred over into economic freedom.
No.
And I still, in as much as I definitely see the link between political freedom and economic freedom, I'm still baffled as to why a lot of us will talk a lot about political freedom, but we don't see how we can gain or benefit from it. And in fact, a lot of us, even though people fought and some people died, we could vote, a lot of us still don't vote, still don't pay attention to politics.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, still don't believe that it makes a difference. And I always tell people, well, if it doesn't make a difference, why are the richest people in our society always paying attention to it? If it's such a useless venture, they would ignore it.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, the right to vote does not give you power. What gives you power is using your vote to influence. That's the power of the vote. And you're right. If the politics and the vote didn't matter, then it's ridiculous. To get Barack Obama to be president, they spent over $500 million for a $250,000 a year job.
Right, right.
You know, and I mean, almost $1 billion was spent between the Democrats and the Republicans to get someone to be president of the United States for a $250,000 job.
And the math is so confused.
It's ridiculous. It's not about the money. These guys are millionaires. They don't become president for money. They become president for influence and power and to push their ideology. And what we recognize now for the midterms elections, it's off the hook. Now they changed the rules that there's no limit to what a company or organization can donate. So there's hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent to get their people, but you see, the blacks are not in on this. And so basically when all is said and done, even when blacks elect blacks, those blacks who are elected don't represent blacks. They feel they need to represent everybody. And so even when black elect black officials, it doesn't benefit black people, because if you put someone who does not understand what it means to be black, then that's why it's been a useless enterprise, because we've been electing and putting people in power, but who, if they're black, they don't understand what it means to be black, or two, that if they're not black, they realize that you're going to vote Democrat anyway, so they don't need to do anything for you because you're black. You're going to vote Democrat. If you're black, you're going to vote liberal. So it doesn't matter. You're always – so blacks tend to vote a certain way, and they're locked into the vote, and they don't hold the people that they vote for accountable. And we won't ever benefit from the vote until we hold those we vote for accountable. And this is one thing blacks have got to start doing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I know of examples right here in the city of Toronto where there are sections of the city that have significantly large black populations that have never had a black representative. And if you look at certain pockets of the city, it doesn't make sense. The math simply doesn't, on the surface, doesn't make sense. And I think a lot of it is because the blacks in those particular areas, we don't take action on election day, and we're not paying attention. So people, on one part, people are complaining that they're not getting services and help from the political establishment in their area. It's not as though there isn't money being channeled into the area. It's just not channeled to the people who – it's channeled to the people who take action. It's not channeled to those who stand on the sidelines and make a whole bunch of noise. And I think that's one of the things we need to understand. We have to get involved, and like you said, keep the leaders accountable. Because there is a sense in the political world that, you know, blacks can be taken advantage of. They can be taken for granted because they're not. They're going to make a whole bunch of noise, but at the end of the day, they're not going to do anything different.
They're not even making enough noise. That's part of the problem. They're not, and if they're making noise, many times the groups that are making noise still have to depend on government to survive. So how much noise can they really make?
They can't make a whole lot of noise.
Because if the government pulls their funding, most black organizations depend on government funding to survive. So how are you going to bite the hand that feeds you? How can they properly represent blacks when, and I'm not saying that there aren't organizations that aren't doing anything, but ultimately, how far can you go and how much can you really rock the boat against those who are funding you? Because most of these organizations are not staying alive because blacks are donating to them.
Right, right. So in essence, these organizations are not independent. They're actually dependent.
Yes.
They're dependent.
And we will never be taken seriously as a nation as long as we're dependent on other people.
Right. You know, you use the word nation quite a bit in the book, and I understand the meaning behind it. But, you know, we talk a lot about, in as much as you talk about us coming together as a nation, and to me that makes sense to me. That's totally logical. One of the things I've learned years ago is that blacks tend to be, you know, what I call tribal. Even ones from the Caribbean, you know, Guyanese tend to talk to Guyanese. mm-hmm. as against, you know, other Caribbean people or Africans, or we don't generally reach out to different groups, even amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're extremely tribal. And to me, quite frankly, that's one of the downfalls of our community.
And I agree with that.
And as much as we live in many nations around the world, speak many languages, have many cultures, and I noticed that, as you said, the Chinese definitely they managed to overcome the distance and the geography. Wherever they are, they're Chinese. And, you know, we don't see, for example, blacks in Brazil aligning themselves with, say, blacks in the Caribbean. And how can we build this unity that you talk about when we're unable to even have discussions with different people, because other groups, they manage to overcome, even the language barrier they manage to overcome, but we still manage to, you know, we're it's almost as if we're caught in a trap.
Yeah.
So how do we overcome that?
Well, part of the thing is that we have to stop trying to be like Europeans or be like Arabs or be like somebody else other than black. And in many of the cases, the blacks in Brazil doesn't even know that they're blacks in the Caribbean and things like that, or the blacks on the other side of the world. I mean, many blacks in North America don't even know that they're blacks in Brazil, and if they know they're blacks in Brazil, they don't realize that Brazil has the largest black population outside of Nigeria. Most blacks don't
in the world.
That. In the world, yeah. They have the second largest black population in the world of any country, right? And so part of it, as you said, blacks tend to be very tribal. Even on the continent, they tend to be tribal. And I believe that as blacks come into the consciousness of being a nation, and that black is not the color of your skin, it's who your great 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 grandfather was. There was a man named Black, and out of him came all these peoples and languages. In the book of Genesis, chapter 10, it tells us that Ham, one of Noah's sons, had a son, and he named him Black. And he said, from these came peoples and languages, and nations and lands came out of this man. And so other people have retained that identity. But unfortunately, we of blacks have not retained that. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, is so that as blacks read it, they recognize, A, it doesn't matter where I was born, I'm black. And I have a responsibility as a black to see about building the black family and ultimately building the black nation and participating in that building. But it's because of a lack of education, a lack of knowledge.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's funny because it's this, I go back to my own history as a Guyanese black person. Mm-hmm. And when I lived in Guyana, I heard about what was going on in Jamaica and Trinidad in the English-speaking world.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard very little about what went on in Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
Suriname, Brazil, mm-hmm. even though they were closer, right?
Yeah, they were next door, yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw a black person who didn't speak English, I was shocked, because in my little world, I thought all blacks spoke English. So mm-hmm. I was shocked when I realized that there were more blacks who spoke Portuguese than there were who spoke English in my part of the world, right? And when I realized that speaking English amongst black people was one, in terms of the Western Hemisphere, it's actually low on the totem pole. I mean, there are more blacks speaking Spanish and Portuguese than English, right? And I think your point is well taken. I think that's one of the things we do have to educate ourselves, you know, to realize, hey, you know what? We're all over. We're everywhere. We're actually, the numbers are in some cases bigger than we think. Because I remember when I heard that there were more blacks in Colombia than there are in the English-speaking Caribbean, I was shocked.
There's about 9 million blacks in Colombia.
Right, and some people say that those numbers are not even accurate. They're low, right?
Those numbers are low. Like Argentina has about 2 million blacks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I would see, and I consider myself fairly worthy, but I was I'm ignorant that I didn't think Argentina had a black population at all. I mean, I've recently come to realize that they're all over South America, and I'm South America.
The only country in the Americas that does not have a significant black population is El Salvador, because they would not allow any blacks to come there. The El Salvadorians, the native people of South, they would not allow for blacks to come there. So that's why there's no significant black population in El Salvador. That's the only country.
Interesting. So the only country in the Americas, in South Central America.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. It's the only country that does not have a significant black population is El Salvador, the only one. All the others
wow.
have a significant black populations in the tens of thousands, if not millions.
Wow, wow. Because even when you talk about Brazil, when you see Brazilians represented on TV, I mean, with the exception of Carnival, you don't see black faces.
No. You don't even see the native of Brazil. The indigenous
right.
people. You see Portuguese.
Exactly. And you know, from what I understand, a lot of the images that are on television in those countries are blonde hair and blue eyed people. When in fact they represent a very small percentage of the population.
So
I, you know, it just tells you that there's a lot of work to be done. And that's why we need the book How Blacks Can Succeed in the Americas, the Caribbean, Africa, and elsewhere, because we have a lot to learn about ourselves.
Yes, we do have a lot.
You know, so it's a long road ahead, but it's not impossible. You talked a lot about the black people coming from the Bible. And there was a person named Black, and obviously you made a lot of references to Christianity, but what do you say to people who say that Christianity is part of the problem and has created this divisions among blacks?
What I say is that folks need to separate Christ from Christianity. Because the nature of colonization is this, that whether it be the Europeans who were basically Christians or the Arabs who were basically Muslims, one of the things they do is that they impose their religious views upon the colonized group. And so they impose their form of Christianity on the colonized group. That's part of the domination, just like the Arabs imposed Islam upon the blacks of Northern Africa. The Europeans imposed Christianity on the blacks and on the Filipinos and wherever they went. But they impose a religion called Christianity on the people. But because the message, they could not bring the message, they didn't bring the message of Christ to them. Because the message of Christ was, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, to give liberty to them that are held captive, to set free those who are in bondage, and to declare the acceptable year of the Lord, which is the year when all slaves and all those who are held captive and all those who are in debt are set free. That's the message that Jesus came preaching. And so they did not come preaching Jesus to the blacks. They preached papacy, Catholicism, Anglicanism. That's what they preached. They preached their form of their religion and their white god. One of the things I bring out in the book is show that Jesus is not white. Couldn't be. But neither is he black. Couldn't be. And I address those who try to make Jesus white, and I address those who try to make him black. And the Bible specifically didn't give us an image of Jesus, because God knew exactly what people would do. And, I mean, if there was anybody going to claim to fame of what he looked like in the flesh, is that he would look like an Arab who was not mixed with European, which would have, that he would have had a kind of an olive complexion. But understand, he was not a European, and so all the pictures, and you see, that bought into the domination of black people, because if God is white, and the Bible says God made man in his image and his likeness, then God made man in his image and likeness, so the white man is in the image and likeness of God, so then whose image is the black man in? And so that
exactly
bought into the domination, and so the confusion was that if the, your savior is in the image of your oppressor, who's going to deliver you? And so basically black people's deliverance was in heaven, not on earth, because there was no one here to deliver them on earth. Their deliverance was when they die and went to heaven. And so they could not see themselves fully in the plan of God on earth, which is that God made man, humanity, to have dominion over the earth. And so if the message of Jesus was preached to the black man, then the black man would have realized that he has as much right as anyone else to have dominion over the earth. And if the message of Jesus was preached to the black man would have never allowed himself to be enslaved by the Europeans. But as I said, they didn't preach Jesus. They preached a white God who was the head of their form of Christianity. And I fully agree that that was a tool of oppression of black people. And that's one reason why blacks were not allowed to read. Because if blacks were allowed to read, then them reading properly, they would realize that the Christ that the Europeans brought to them was not the Christ in the Bible, and they were revolted long ago. But unfortunately, blacks just kept regurgitating whatever they were taught until men like myself realized that what the Europeans taught from the Bible was not in the Bible. And I can say this, the Bible is, if not the only book, basically one of the only books where blacks can actually find out that black is a nation and not a skin color, because that's how I discovered it. And no other book that I read gave me that information and made me understand, you know, that even the fact that blacks developed democracy, representative government, hundreds of years before the Greeks ever did. I found that in the Bible, not in any history book. History books told me the Greeks invented democratic government. The Bible tells me a black man introduced it to Israel. And there's so much more that...
But wouldn't that clash? I would imagine that what you just told me would. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of black preachers out there would probably be upset to hear that, because based on how they've been taught, that survival is
it's
a colorblind world.
Yeah.
No, you know, I mean, we could argue whether it's blind to certain colors. Right.
Yeah. The reality is the Bible doesn't deal with colors. It deals with nations, and that's what, if you read the Bible, it deals with ethnes and goyim, the Hebrew, and ethne the Greek. It deals with nations and peoples, and that's how God deals. God is the one that made the variety of peoples and cultures. We're not boring. everybody's not the same. And many times when I bring out these things, well, you know, I lay it out, and basically they have to argue with what's there. And there is no arguing with what's there. It's just basically many times people just teach what they were taught and didn't even look at it. Like many times when I say that Moses' wife was a black woman, I hear people go, huh? I hear people's mouth drop. because
right.
they don't know that Moses' wife was a black woman, and that Moses' children were black Hebrews, you know. So and that those who came from Moses was descended from a black woman, and so when you bring things like that out, it's like many people in the church, their mouth drop because they're told that, well, God, you know, is everybody's the same. Well, everybody was supposed to be the same. God would have made everybody the same. Everybody's not the same. And we're not supposed to be the same.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's funny because even though, you know, you touched a lot about earlier about single parenthood and how prevalent it is in our community, but if black people are generally a fairly religious group, if we're so religious, why do we still have a lot of these social ills?
Well, you see, because the problem is this, and this is where people get controversial about it, is that you can, how do I put it? Religion is, as far as I'm concerned, and you say, well, you're a pastor, why are you talking like this? But religion basically is how I explain the suffering that goes on in this world and make sense of God and still hold a belief in God. Because I'm religious, but I'm suffering, I'm going through all these different things, but God must have a purpose and a place. So how people actually live, on the most part, is detached from their belief in God in real everyday sense. Because just because they're religious, and they say they believe in God, for most people, that's not able to control their passions and their desires and what they want to do and what they feel like doing without thinking about the consequence of their action. Because what is God going to do? Strike them down with lightning? I want to have sex. I feel like having sex. What's God going to do about that? You know, and so... And so the bad habits and some of the social ills that blacks subconsciously picked up through colonization and slavery are continually perpetuated, and their religious belief systems doesn't have the power to really overcome those tendencies, and we see the breeding mentality and the stud mentality still manifested very much in our black communities.
That's interesting. Interesting. Wow. I mean, we could do a whole show about that. That's a very different and controversial position, especially coming from a pastor. Absolutely. I mean, I can certainly, you know, I myself, I've not heard too many pastors phrase things in the manner in which you have. Generally, they take a very conservative approach, and that is your approach is a little more broad based. But I was nonetheless very realistic, right?
And I think that's the reality on the ground, right?
Right.
You know, that's what it is, and if we don't acknowledge what it is, we can't fix it.
Right. Right. I mean, also in your book, you touched on the brain drain in the Caribbean and Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally know a little bit about it. I know a person who has helped to develop several Guyanese communities abroad. One guy, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some people who would argue that he's contributed to the brain drain. But you know, how do you stop the brain drain from those countries? Because I understand where people are coming from. People are tired of poverty. They're tired of struggling. They're tired of duking it out. They just want a break. And the irony is, most don't want to leave their country, but they don't see any other options. So how do you stop that, given a situation like that?
Well, the first thing is that really to stop it, the governments of the Caribbean and in Africa, they have to begin to get their political and policy act together to ensure that their civil servants earn a living wage, and it's possible. And I have developed actually a monetary policy that could help them do that, I'm not going to share it on the radio, but
right, I understand.
but there are ways that, but they need to make their primary purpose to ensure that their educators, their civil servants are earning a living wage. That also, that so that they can live a decent quality of life in their countries, so they are not motivated to leave. Also, what that does is lower corruption, that they don't feel that they have to hijack people to get supplementary income to order to live. And so the basic thing of stopping the brain drain is that the governments have to get their act together, because rightfully said, people get tired of struggling. So many people don't want to leave their countries. But the governments have to create an environment that is conducive for people to stay in the Caribbean and Africa, and not only stay, but for expatriates to go back and feel it's safe to go back, and that they can go back and live a decent quality of life for themselves and for their children. And so the government has a significant part to play, and one of the things you see in the book, and as people get the book realize, I'm not just about talk. This book is 19 years in the making. I've thought this thing through and developed strategies and ideas that if we implement these things, we can sit at the table of all nations as equals throughout all the world.
Interesting, interesting. Well, that tells people that they need to get a copy of the book so they can understand it for themselves. So, included the access, how people can get a copy of the book. Gary, if you'd like to go ahead and tell people how they can get a copy as well.
Yeah, they can go to How Blacks Can Succeed, the title of the book, H-O-W, Blacks, B-L-A-C-K-S-C-A-N, Succeed, S-U-C-C-E-E-D.com, HowBlacksCanSucceed.com. And also they can get information about Fight for Justice, and if they need more information on what Fight for Justice is all about and being part of Fight for Justice, they can go to GaryHibbert.com, GaryHibbert. The book is $20, and then there's plus shipping and handling, but the book is $20, and so they can go online. And so I recommend everybody that's hearing this program, get the book. Your life will never be the same. The way you view black people will never be the same. How you view yourself as a black will never be the same. And we will not stop this systemic cycle of poverty, crime, and injustice amongst significant black populations until we understand who we are as a nation and what we must do to have a common unity and reach the common goal, so that we are no longer divided based on languages and religions. And we're part of the world we're from, and we begin to build true nationhood so that we can experience true economic and political freedom.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Gary, we've got a minute left. I still didn't. There's still lots of questions I got to ask you. But I want to thank you for, first of all, not just for coming on, but for writing the book. I think you're going to have to come back on again, because, like I said, there's still more questions that I need answered myself. And I'm trying to keep my mind open. And I want things to change for our community. I mean, I think there's lots of possibilities, and we're not tapping into the talent of our community as we should. And as you said, which is kind of scary, we're actually going backwards. And in some ways, we're actually better off than the days of slavery, which is, it's kind of scary. But here we are in 2010, and we're still struggling with the legacy of slavery.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, folks, I would encourage you to get a copy of the book, How Blacks Can Succeed in the Americas, the Caribbean, Africa, or anywhere else, and go to GaryHibbert.com and just get yourself a copy. Get yourself a copy. Once again, Gary, thanks a million. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Let's do this again real soon. And
Well, that's your call. I'm available. Your call.
Okay. Well, I will certainly make the call. Certainly make the call.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you very much. Take care. We'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that concludes another episode of Colin's Edge right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned next week. Good night.